Good morning, everyone. So last week I got a bit muddled up, but I think that today we are supposed to start our study at the bottom of page 651, line 383. In the preceding passage, starting on page 649 at the break, Sri Aurobindo described a change in the tone, in the sound of death's voice. Some kind of acknowledgement that some great thing has been done, some light, some power has been delivered from the huge inconscience grasp. And there's a change also in his form. His form of dread was altered and admitted our human transient effort at eternity. He has been denying the value of all that, but Savitri's last words seem to have brought about a change in him. But still, he's casting doubt on any further progress, what else might have been, and on hints of an impossible day. He doesn't yet accept the possibility of a total defeat of the powers of darkness. When he speaks to Savitri, he admits something. He says, "Because thou knowest the wisdom that transcends both veil of forms and the contempt of forms, arise, delivered by the seeing gods." So it's also an acknowledgement of her achievement, her knowledge, her wisdom. But then he tells her, "The trouble with you is that you have too much love and you are too eager to implement that love and to change things." He says, "Those who are wise are tranquil, like the great hills, like the mountains." So in the end, he uses these words which we have heard Mother read: "Touch not the seated lines, the ancient laws. Respect the calm of great established things." This is now the way that he wants to restrain her and block her dynamic will. So how will she reply to him? Margaret, would you read?
"But Savitri replied to the huge god, 'What is the calm thou vows, O law, O death? Is it not the dull vision tread in it, of monstrous energies chained in a stark round, soulless and stone-eyed with mechanic dreams? Vain the soul's hope if changeless law is all. Changeless. Ever to the new and the unknown press on, the speeding aeons justifying God. What were Earth's ages if their grained, gray restraint were never broken and glorious, sprang not forth, bursting their obscure seed, by man's slow life, leaped hurried into sudden splendid path by divine words and human gods revealed. Impose not upon sentient minds and hearts the dull fixity that binds inanimate things. Well, is unconscious rule for the animal breeds content to live beneath the immutable yoke, man turns to a nobler war, a master path. I tremble on thy law with living feet, for to arise in freedom I was born. If I am mighty, let my force be unveiled, equal companion of the dateless powers, or else let my frustrated soul sink down, unworthy of Godhead, in the original sleep. I claim from time my will's eternity, God from his moments.
God from his moments.
Establish things. Establish by whom?
By him. By death. No. No, the things that have so far been established in the earth evolution. He doesn't want anything to move further or change. Yes, I think we have to look at her whole speech before we come to that. She's asking him, what is this calm that you seem to be so proud of, O law? We have to remember that this god of death in the traditional conception, he is also the god of law, who keeps everything in the universe in its place. That's part of the role that he is playing. He doesn't want his laws to change. But Savitri points out that what he's talking about is the inertia of matter, of material things. There's been a certain kind of development, but there are these huge, monstrous, titanic energies. They are restricted in their movement, in this stark, round, soulless and stone-eyed with mechanic dreams. She says the soul's hope, the soul's aspiration cannot be fulfilled if law, and especially the law of matter, is everything. In fact, time is always moving on, ever to the new and the unknown pass on, the speeding eons. They are moving. To us, they seem to move very slowly, but in the evolutionary process, perhaps they are speeding. And in their movement, they are justifying the divine intention. What have all these ages of the earth been for if it's not to break this gray restraint of the laws of matter so that new glories can emerge? Their seed maybe is dark and obscure. We can't see what glories are hiding in them, but they will emerge. And she says even this slow life beings, where everything seems to be relatively unchanged, from time to time it does leap suddenly into splendid paths that are revealed to the race by divine words and human gods. They speed up the whole process of evolution. So she says, don't impose upon sentient minds and hearts, minds and hearts that have feelings and emotions. Don't impose on them this dull fixity that is binding inanimate things, material things. The unconscious life or the unconscious rule is quite okay for these animal species, animal breeds, who will feel content to live beneath this unchanging yoke of law. But man is a mental being, man has a soul, man turns to a nobler path, a walk, a master path. He wants to control, be in control of himself and of his environment. So she says, I trample on thy law with living feet, with my living feet, I trample underfoot this law that you are so proud of, no? Because I was born to arise in freedom. He praised her for being mighty. He said, mighty art thou with the dread goddess filled to whom thou prayedst in the morning in the woods, no? Here she says, if I am mighty, then let my force be unveiled. Let me show my strength and power. Let me show that it is the equal companion of the dateless powers. It has the same strength and value as these laws that you are praising. If that's not true, then my soul will be frustrated. Let it sink down into this original sleep which you are praising and this peace. But as long as I'm here, as long as I have living feet, I'm going to claim from time the eternity of my will. That my will has come from eternity, it will apply through eternity. This, what I want to achieve, I am not going to let it go. I'm claiming God from his moments, God, the eternal and the infinite. I want him to be fully revealed in earthly time.
Shastan, again, you said the other day the points, no? That is a very important one. It's in the middle of the skull, and that would like to be so we can't now,
we can't hear you properly, Anandi.
The other day, you said that Shalavindo has spoken about the punctuation on Savitri.
He's spoken about what?
Punctuation, good. I don't how you say
stress. It. The stress.
When you put dots, punctuation. No?
The punctuation.
Punctuation.
Yes.
Okay, you say that he was written about that. Sometimes he put dots in one place, and here is very, very powerful one. No? She stops in the middle, like.
And she stops in the middle of the line.
Stops in the middle of it. It's very powerful.
Yes.
I think it's interesting. God from his moments.
Yes. Well, we think of God being timeless and beyond time. But one of the things which Sri Aurobindo would like us to understand is that God is in all the moments. And I want, she says, I want God to be not veiled, not hidden, but fully revealed in the moments of earthly time, fully expressed here in the divine life, which will be the fulfillment. The time spirit he speaks of, yes.
death that lies in that. Why should another, an immortal being, stoop to the petty works of transient earth, freedom forgotten and the eternal star? Or is this the high wish of the spirit and thought, to struggle with the bones of death and time, and extend the labor that might earn the reward the gods, and battle and wear agony of wounds, to grasp the trivial joys that earth can bear, in the small treasure chest of passing things? Sweet child, hast thou trodden the gods beneath thy feet, only to win poor streets the threats of earthly life, for him thou lovest, canceling the grand release, keeping from every rapture of the heavens his soul, the lenient deities have come? Are thy arms sweeter than the cords of God?
So he asks her, what are you using your strength for, if you're so powerful? Why are you using it just to win poor shreds of earthly life for him thou lovest? Why would this noble and immortal will stoop down to do this lowly task, to the petty works of transient earth, forgetting the freedom of transcendence and the path of the eternal? Is this the way you are going to use your strength and your thought to struggle with the bonds of death and time? These things that are fixed and inevitable, what a waste of your energies. This enormous effort that would have earned the gods, you could have earned a divine status as one of the cosmic powers. You are battling and bearing the agony of wounds to grasp, to get hold of these trivial joys that earth can guard, that earth keeps in her small treasure chest of passing things. What can the material world offer you that is worth having, you with your great capacities? You want to win back for Satyavan earthly life, and for that you're going to spoil this opportunity that he's been given of the grand release, early rapture of the heavens. He's lucky to be dying so young, having the heavenly delights before his time. No, the generous, kind deities have called his soul. What are you doing? No? Do you think that your embrace is sweeter to him than the courts of God, the heavenly realms? He thinks that he can discourage her like this. It's really ridiculous, isn't it? He has to try everything.
That's a big one. If he's offering the exchange between the earthly life for my partner and the place in the court of God, I'd rather wish her well and happiness and let her go there and enjoy the company.
Let him go there, he is saying. He wants Satyavan to be allowed to go there without interference.
Yeah. No, I would do the same. I would stay the partner.
That's what you would choose.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the point in a way, isn't it? But Savitri is not interested in these, what we can say, transient joys. No? Her mission is to break a new path for humanity. And so she can't give way to this kind of trickery. So how does she answer to Antoine?
She answered, "Straight I tramp along the road. The strong hand cured for me explained to me our parts. I run where a sweet, dreadful voice commands, and I am driven by the reins of God. Why drew he wide his scheme of mighty worlds, or filled infinity with his passionate breath? Or wherefore did he build my mortal form, and sow in me his bright and proud desires? Not with sheep, to flower in me, to love, carving his human image, richly shaped in thoughts and largeness and golden powers. For heaven can wait our coming in its call."
Thank you. Oh, so again, she uses this word trample. It means really vigorously putting the feet on the ground, no? And she says, "I'm trampling on the road, the strong hand hewed for me." A strong hand has cut through this road for me to travel. That same strong hand which planned our paths. I'm following that way that has been prepared for me, where his sweet, dreadful voice commands, the voice of God. No? I'm driven by the reins of God, as if she is a horse being guided by the Lord. No? Why has he made this creation at all? Why has he drawn and planned this scheme of mighty worlds, filled infinity with his passionate breath? She doesn't think of him as being calm. He's full of intensity and passion, and he's filled the universe with that passion and intensity. Why has he built this mortal form? It's subject to death, but still in it God has sown, like a farmer sowing seeds or a gardener. He's sown in me as a representative of humanity his bright and proud desires. Why did he do that if he didn't intend those desires to be achieved, if he didn't intend those seeds to flower in the form of love? And he has carved this human image of himself, richly shaped, not only physically, but in thoughts and largenesses and golden powers, all these high possibilities that he has sown in human beings. And then she says, why should we be in such a hurry to reach heaven? It can wait for us. It's so calm. It doesn't need to be impatient.
Passion does not involve love. It's just the
passion, actually, it can mean a whole range of things. It can mean suffering. Passion, it can mean intense suffering. So the key idea of passion is intensity of feeling. Well, later on she will tell us, perhaps she has already explained it in some way, that these things that we think of as desires, these urges for richer experience and enjoyment and so on, these are in fact seeds of higher powers. No? That's how we express them at the moment in our half-evolved state. but they should not be eradicated, because that leaves us inert, like the animal breeds. Yes, it's a motivation. Yes, exactly.
It's motivation. Basically, our history says that it's
better. So I
don't
know, it's a bit too.
Yeah.
For perfection, desires for
perfection. Yes, that's in a way what we are all more or less consciously. A lot of it is unconscious, but we want things to be more and more perfect. More and more delightful, more and more permanent, worthwhile in every way. So those impulses may get expressed in very small, mean ways, but still they are, in their origin, divine seeds. The life energy, much earlier in the poem, it says how this life energy, which gets here expressed often in such perverted ways, is a great goddess. And the line is not coming to me. But she was born in heaven, and her work is to bring those heavens here.
What I understood was, like, the desires for material things is not, should not be there, and only the eternal things should be there. But
well, that is our interpretation. That is our moral interpretation of things.
But
no,
here it's different.
Which is important for us in our development, for us to distinguish. What kind of impulses in ourselves we want to encourage, and which ones we would prefer not to encourage. No, that's important for us. But from an evolutionary point of view, all these urges for something better and more are valuable. They help to push towards a more divine future.
Margaret is very clear when she says in relation with Christianity that we don't say no to money, no to this, because we have to work with the things to go up. Because you're alone, you don't touch money, you don't touch love. She says if you don't touch this love, you never arrive to that one.
Yes.
I mean, it's a different way than me, different way of working.
Like what he said, like between giving the choice, like between the heaven or Satyavan or bringing him back, same with Krishna's this thing.
Mm.
I would have not fought the war in spite of everything.
Yes.
As a background, but the God says like you should fight.
Yes.
So I'm still not very clear to me.
Why he should?
Right thing.
Why he says you should fight?
Yeah, it's a duty, but it's duty of material things. I mean, he's a king, he's a Rajput, so he should fight. He's a warrior. So, but still not very. This thing. The same question as he asked.
One day we have to study essays on the Gita.
Yeah.
After this, I would like to reply to you that the material is not against material wealth. It's not a fact. He says that it's not the yoga for ascetic behavior. Says you should be
ascetic behavior.
You should be able to live without it. When you have it, enjoy it.
But without attachment, without desire.
When
you start
to
try
your
best, the
world. When you limit yourself, when you start to use words like I should or we should, you limit yourself in your possibilities. As a matter of fact, he uses the word desire. He doesn't use the word will. The desire leaves a certain kind of openness and realization. He doesn't say you, it's his desire. He doesn't say to you how you should do it.
Read in one comment a text that Krishna had to fight because there have been all kingdoms in India, they had been fighting. That was the only thing what they did. And this to break, to change the rules set up for this, the war was needed.
Mm. So. There were two groups anyway. Yeah. I think we were united into two groups during the Chitra War.
I think we can't go off into this.
Yes.
We can only say.
Basically, not two groups. You should stay with your feet on the ground to recognize the difference between the two. But it should not limit you. You should not stick to it. You should go beyond it. That's all purpose.
Krishna asks Arjuna to follow him. He's driving the chariot. Go with me where I go and shoot your arrows where I tell you to do. If you do that, there'll be no sin in you, no negative consequence for you. So this means to be in tune with the divine will. And that's what Savitri is saying here, that I'm just doing what the Lord wants me to do. Tom.
Reading the last passage and hearing what you're saying about that, my question is, could you not say that in a certain sense, from a certain perspective, Savitri also walks the road of a changeless law.
Yes, but her is the law, the seed that's been planted in her, the divine seed, no? And that's what she has to stand for. In the same way as death has to stand for his role, no? And very, very early on in the poem in Canto 2, Sri Aurobindo has presented this conflict as a conflict of two eternal powers. Death has not yet recognized Savitri as his equal. No, that will come in Book 11. But still he will be, testing her firmness. Can he dissuade her from this purpose, this great symbolic will that she has to bring living Satyavan back to earth? Yes, she's treating him as an equal. Yes. 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 I had such an angry letter from somebody the other day because somebody connected with the Aurobindonian family had published a little book in one of the regional languages about this story. And he said, how can he do it? He's showing Savitri bowing to death. You know, he was really angry with that person on the cover of the book. No, there was a picture of Savitri bowing to death. Never Savitri will bow her head. Sorry.
Desire or wanting something is to bring a dynamism in the being and in the world.
Yes.
Desiring something to satisfy one's ego is not right, but desiring something for the life divine or the divine is.
Yeah, and for an onlooker, it's very difficult to tell. No, that is why Krishna could be criticized. No, that is why death can criticize Savitri. So it is for the individual soul to know who it is or what it is obeying. So in a sense, that is beyond accepted human morality. So there are these four grades of morality, no? artha, kama, dharma, moksha. Savitri has reached the stage where she is free from the lower laws of morality. Let's go on.
Yeah.
Because what she says next is very, very interesting. Prasad.
Easy the heaven built for God. Yet poses difficult matter, earth the glory. Gave up the problem and the race and strife. There are the ominous masks, the terrible powers. There it is greatness to create the gods. It is not the spirit immortal and absorbed always, delivered from the grasp of time. Why came it down to the mortal space?
Let's pause there. This is the challenge. I think this is the great originality of Sri Aurobindo, which speaks here. Savitri later on says, I've been there, I've been in heaven, I know what it's like. And probably we all know that's where we've come from. But we've agreed to come here because this was the difficult matter. Earth gives the glory of the problem and the race and strife, the clash and the conflict, because in this material universe, in its process of evolution, then these ominous masks, these threatening disguises, these terrible powers are at work, active. So it is on earth that it's a great task to realize divinity, to create the gods. The spirit which is in all of us is always immortal, always absolved, always free from the grasp of time. Why has it come here? Why has it come down into the mortal space? And now she will say why. You like to read?
I have one question. This last sentence, is not the spirit immortal and absorbed?
Always.
That is delivered from the grasp of time. Not on the play of time. I saw that also the spirit immortal and absorbed comes out of this time of working in time.
It's always free from the grasp of time. Yes.
The charge he gave to his high spirit in man and wrote a little degree on the interest. Freedom of this ever seated soul, large in life's limits, strong in medicinals, building great stock of action from the words, to make fine wisdom from false scattered strands, and love and beauty for the warm and night, the nature of the poor and again divine, for liberty that the soul which feels not free.
Winds. Thine yours, yes. God has given a charge to his high spirit in human beings, in man. And he's written a hidden decree, a secret law, on the highest levels of nature. A responsibility. If you're in charge, you are the person responsible. A mission. You charge somebody with a mission. So the human race has a mission to fulfill. And it can fulfill that mission when men become aware that by identifying with the soul and the spirit, they can be free in all the conditions of life and circumstances of life. So that is true freedom. With ever-seated soul, to know one's largeness even while acting within the limits of life. To be strong with the spirit's strength, the soul's strength, even in this time and place where the knots of matter are prevalent. Nevertheless, to build great stuff of action from the worlds. When he says the worlds, he must mean not only the material world, but all the subtle worlds. To be able to make fine wisdom from the coarse, scattered strands of knowledge that we have access to here at our present stage of evolution. To be able to achieve love and beauty in these conditions of war and night. For God, this was the wager wonderful. Can it be done? Will it work? This is the game divine. If there's a wager, there's a risk you may lose. That's part of the thrill of the game. So the soul that doesn't feel free unless it's merged in divine delight, that can't feel free even when it's tied up with matter's knots. The free soul knows that it accepts these limitations willingly because these are the knots that the lover is wrapping around his playmate's limbs. A free soul will choose his tyranny, accept to be crushed in his embrace. She accepts in order to love him better, to be able to embrace him better with her boundless heart. She accepts the limiting circle of his arms. Full of bliss, she bows beneath his mastering hands and laughs in his rich constraints, most bound, most free. I don't need that other kind of freedom, she says. I can accept this kind of freedom.
Sarima?
Yes, Tara.
I understand this about the souls. Mm. What's the relation between this high spirit in man and soul? Is it the same thing?
Souls are individualized. The spirit is impersonal. So he speaks about the spirit in man, in the whole human race. We discussed these lines before last week, but no harm looking at them again. Rosa.
Conquest, the lands of the gods, carried out
Chance.
The cosmic law is greater than I will. Even God himself obeys the laws he made. The law abides.
Thank you. We had a look at this last week also, but if anybody's got any questions. Here he says accomplished things, not established things, but it's the same meaning, the things that have been achieved and settled. You have to obey the cosmic law, whoever you are, even if you are the mighty mother of the worlds. If you're working on the realms of chance in this manifestation, you have to obey the cosmic. God himself obeys, yes, exactly. And the law abides and it can't change. And the individual, the person, is just a bubble on time's sea, a bubble of foam on that great ocean. It's transient, it's not lasting, it has no eternal significance, he says.
Solomon, this is here, this, which the great God's fence, their camping space. And this comes to me, that's a Vadaya said, when one is doing his way to the divine, it is his personal development. Maybe in the past it was, people can follow it, and more with the new creation, everyone has to find its own living way. So this fence there can be in space, that was for me to reflect on it. Well, hearing from you is sort of a piece of what about individuation.
Yes. That's one of the developed things, yeah.
Yeah, and that look at the fact that a man and a woman, maybe they were one here too, and they have this conflict, and yet they are drawn to each other some way. She produces him, but she needs him to produce. I mean, there's all this reproduction, all this. So it's this ever continuing struggle to refine that process of emerging and at the same time individuation. I know this thing about God and the human.
Yes, that's what she's talking about, no? Why has he made me like this? He wanted me to be like this, and this is how I am, and this is the way I'm going. No? And in a sense, this is true for all of us. No? It is true in a special way for Savitri, because of the great, because of her origin, and because of the great yoga that she has done. But essentially, we are all divine souls. No? And we have all accepted this challenge and this adventure to plunge into the matter, the knots of matter, the limitations of the material world, with I'm sure at that time when we were given the opportunity, when we were asked, will you do it, we were shown both the challenge and the possibility. But the thing is, Mother says, you know, when the soul takes birth in a body, in a material body, it's as if it falls on its head and it forgets everything. And it takes a long time to remember. It may take a whole lifetime. But whatever is done in that lifetime by the individual, which is significant for the development of the soul, will be remembered in a way and retained, partly by the race, but also by that individual soul.
Then
there's a critical mass, yes, exactly. Yes. Yes, a new principle emerges in evolution. The laws of matter don't, they apply in part, but when it emerges, there's a new set of laws, completely different, almost opposite. Life emerges in the material world under the domination of matter, so it's restricted, it's limited, but still it's a completely new principle, and it works itself out from those simplest single-celled creatures to conscious human beings, some of whom even become spiritualized human beings. Because mind has emerged, and the spirit is anyway in all this, and the souls are all of them striving to make the gods here, to make the Yes. Yes. And we could say the difference between us and them is that they became conscious of their mission. The mother actually very early on, from her childhood, from being 4 or 5, Sri Aurobindo had some intuitions in his youth. He says when he was 11 he had some experience, then it came again and again. But that emerged later in his life. So it's probably different, but the essential process is the same. The law of the process is the same.
The choice you're talking about, the soul which is given a choice whether to come down, that is again be given after all the karma has been worked out.
I'm talking about the soul before one can't really use the word before, but entering the manifestation. We think of the origin, the source, as concentrated Brahman. That's the term Sri Aurobindo uses. Mm-hmm. Containing within itself all the possibilities and potentialities. And then in the process of creation, some of these infinite possibilities are projected and then given the choice. Are you going to go further?
Yeah, that is clear. But when does it end? My choice, my soul has taken.
When it's fulfilled.
Again, I've completed the cycle.
When it is fulfilled.
Yes. Then you get shoes from.
Yeah. That is millions of years away.
For some, you need many lives, also one.
A few lives, you may get at least.
When you see all this, as often is translated in the end, is that he creates for his enjoyment, so it's a kind of what traditionally is said, lila play. And of course, to be integral, which is the point of Sri Aurobindo and Mother, you need to create a duality, otherwise, you never reach all the different levels. And so, when it is for his joy to go back to himself, using going through all the different levels, probably easy. It's simple. It makes it complicated because we lose that overall view due to the different levels. Because when you are close within a room, you don't see beyond the walls. Instead of you, when you're up, you see that building where you are, the next building where you go. It becomes a play that he doesn't obey his laws, he looks at it. But he gives you the point to change those laws that he apparently made for his play purpose. I don't know if I mean.
Thank you, Tom. Patty.
My understanding is every time a new avatar comes, the whole idea is he's changing.
Offering a new possibility, yeah.
And the problem with death is he's always the fellow who says that it cannot change.
Yes.
So there are always people that are stuck like that. They say this is the way it's always been done. It has to be done like this. The guru or whatever established it like that, and it cannot change. And that is the biggest problem in collective life.
Yes, but Sri Aurobindo says this has been arranged also because this strong conservative force is necessary to firmly establish each of the stages. So it's all necessary. The inertia, the rajas, the dynamism, the sattva, and beyond that.
Mind is more firmly established and spread in the physical, that resistance will be gone.
That's what he says. That's what he says. It will be an evolution in truth instead of in ignorance.
Fight the battle of Kurukshetra anymore, because it will be done.
Soon.
But it won't be stuck. It'll be
Continually developing.
And everybody will be happy about it.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Next slide.
That's
what's coming. No, not next slide. Get with it. Come on.
We need Donald Trump, right?
Sorry?
We need Donald Trump, right?
Unfortunately, we still seem to need Donald Trump to show us what we don't want. At least that's the case with me. So let's get back to Sri Aurobindo. It's more interesting. Oh, Savitri has answered death. Now he's going to begin. We read this. We're on page 654, line 475. Yeah. Perhaps this too we looked at last week already, no? Yes, 474. I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Corinne.
Corinne, would you read?
Cherished ID, elect amount, elect.
thus favoring me the children of light, who high voice proud to stay grounded to mine. Four people in dormitories in infancy.
Thank you. So he admits that Savitri is a forerunner, somebody who's going in front of a greater truth to come. It's quite an admission. No? He says, your soul is strong enough to create its own law, which is freer than the law which is currently dominating the earth. And you are praising or boasting about a force behind on which this freer law relies. But that's a light which only you have seen. Nobody else has seen it. But on the basis of that law and that light, you are claiming the first fruits of truth's victory, the first results. You are saying that the cosmic law should be changed according to your will, and Satyavan should be able to return to earth. But what is that truth? But he's going to imply that none of us can know what is truth.
This is sarcastic.
Yes.
Yeah, even the first two lines may be sarcastic. I mean, yes. You are saying this, but maybe not really acknowledging her strength.
Yes, maybe not. Yes.
Truth is eternal, so death cannot have any concept of what it is. But his business is to destroy them.
Is it
good? Your truth is just your preference. Yeah. Hmm? Your heart's wish. No? It's a vague and splendid word by which man's thought sanctions and consecrates his choice, the choice of his nature. No? The heart's wish, putting on this robe of knowledge. No? Your favorite idea, your cherished idea, chosen among the chosen ideas. Thoughts favorite amid all the other thoughts. All thoughts, he says, are children of half-light, the half-light of ignorance. And when they're awake, they, like children playing in a playground, they're shouting and playing and making a noise. And then they sleep in the dormitories of mind, of thought. So he's going to say to Savitri how he thinks things are. And it's worth reading this. Audrey, would you read, please?
All things hang here between God's yes and no. Two powers real to each other uncouth. Two concert stones. The white head and black tail of the mystic drake, the swift and the lame foot, wing strong, wing broken, sustaining the body of the uncertain world, a great surreal dragon in the skies, too dangerously a high proud truth mystic entangled in the matter's mortal earthiness. All in this world is true, yet all is false. Its thoughts into an eternal cipher run. Its deeds swell to time's rounded zero sum.
Thank you. Anybody would like to say anything about these lines?
Can you explain the pastime, all things can heal between. Yes and no.
Yes and no are opposites, no? Positive and negative. He seems to be saying that this world is a world of dualities, contradictions, opposites. He speaks of two powers. Both of them are real, but each of them seems untrue to the other. So we could say perhaps that this might be spirit and matter, or soul and nature, something like that. They are consort stars, actually they belong together in the mooned night of mind, this darkness of mind which is lit by a moon, a reflecting light, reflective light. And these two powers are looking towards two opposite horizons, maybe heaven and earth, perhaps.
White head and black head, is this a symbol of?
Yes, so one of them is white. Maybe we would say that spirit is white and integral and pure, perhaps. And maybe that matter or nature is dark. But they belong to one animal.
But evil is not included in this.
You can think of good and evil, if you like. Yes, yes. So one of them moves swiftly. The other one is stumbling and halting, no? Lame foot. There's one strong wing and one broken wing. These two, these opposites, are holding up the body of this uncertain, ambiguous, dubious world where it's difficult to know what anything means, no? And he gives this picture of a great surreal dragon in the skies.
What does surreal mean exactly?
Surreal means more than real, but also very strange, because it's not like our reality that we are familiar with.
Does this symbol come from Vedas or?
I don't know. Somebody can do. You have something to say, Patricia?
Well, I think it was last year or a few years ago, so the memory may not be so clear, but I did a little bit of research on the drake and the dragon. And in the Greek language, D-R-A-K-O-N is...
A dragon.
Dracon. Yes.
Yeah, the word drake can mean a dragon.
Yeah. Yeah. So etymologically, I did that. I don't have anything else to say about
it
this time.
Is drake also a male swan?
Sorry?
A drake is a male duck.
Yeah.
Oh, duck.
And in one place in the poem, Sri Aurobindo uses the the word to mean a male duck. He speaks of fire-winged drakes swimming in silvery pools in book five, first canto of book five. But here, perhaps he means a dragon.
Well, if somebody knows the Greek language, I would be interested, because there is a Greek word, D-R-A-G-O-N-E. And the two words are there, but they are specific in their meanings.
Anyway, in our language, there can be some confusion, but we don't have to be confused. Here, he's speaking about a dragon. So that means an elemental energy. Yes, you have something to say.
This topic truth to me seems very important, and the devil seems to... to say it's all relative, yeah. And I think that is just one
of his arguments.
A limited point of view.
Yes.
Yeah. Things how they really are is what for me means truth.
Yes.
Yeah? And that is of course only a question of perspective.
Yes, thank you, thank you.
Does anybody know what is the dragon in Chinese culture? What it represents?
Well, in all cultures, a dragon is a very powerful embodiment of energy. In the West, we think of it as a negative thing, but in the East, it's auspicious. But in either case, it is guarding treasures. And in the Vedas, they speak, and Sri Aurobindo obviously had an experience which he expresses as the dragon of the dark foundations, which is in the deep cave of the subconscious, guarding all the treasures there. That's what it does. But this dragon is not in the cave. This dragon is in the skies. So perhaps I think what you said is very illuminating. What he's talking about, or what he's trying to do, is to debunk the idea that there's an recognizable, ascertainable truth. In fact, in this world, everything is ruled by duality, yes and no, is it or isn't it? No? Yeah. And then he says, your high, proud truth, what he says that Savitri is relying on, it's very dangerous for it to live entangled in matter's mortal littleness. These are two opposites, truth, her truth, and matter cannot go together. And then he even says, all in this world is true, but it's also all false. Yes? So this means that everything adds up to nothing. Its thoughts run into an eternal cipher. Its deeds, what this world does or achieves, they get more and more and more, but they still only add up to nothing, to zero. Everything gets cancelled out.
That's the mental way of looking at it.
Huh? Yes, that's the mental way.
Because the other way is synthesizes everything.
Anyway, I think we have to stop there today. One, maybe? Yeah.
And then on travel.
Yes.
This applies to the why should the noble and immortals will stoop to the fitting works of transient freedom forgotten and the eternal spark. She answered, strange, I trample on the bone, the strong hand hewed for me, which planned our path. Freedom in this, with ever-seeking soul. Lord, in life's limits, strong in matter, not building great stuff erection from the world to make fine wisdom from coarse scattered strength. And love and beauty out of war and night, the wage of wonderful.